All your beautiful faces this morning. How's everybody feeling this morning? You're full from yesterday? Ready for more? Yes? Awesome. I'm so excited to have you here. So we have a lot planned today. I'm sorry we went late yesterday, but we had a little, you know, trouble keeping speakers from giving too much, which is it's a good problem to have because they're so generous with their sharing. But the fortunate thing is people get tired at the end of the day and have to leave. So we promise that won't happen again today. We have dinner, a banquet planned at 6:15 or 6:30, whatever, something like that. And so we will have you out in plenty of time to get to dinner. We have something special planned at dinner. My son, who's a musician and a songwriter and singer, has decided to grace us with his presence tonight, and he's going to play music during. He's going to come about 7, so we'll have a chance to eat and then just kind of listen to his music. So if you have specific requests, you can always ask when he gets here. But I'm not allowed to introduce him. This is the thing with the youth. He's 21. He doesn't want to get embarrassed with mom introducing him. So he just gets to come in and plugs in his amp and starts to play and entertain us. So I just thought I'd introduce him now so I don't get in trouble later. But the kid with the long, wavy hair with the guitar, it's my boy. And it's very exciting to me. So, what I wanted to do is, I want to do a little recap, and then we're going to go into today. And today, my sections that I have planned are polyvagal theory. Anybody hear about that? Sympathetic versus parasympathetic nervous system and how we can help our clients facilitate that. We're going to talk a little bit more clarifications on keto, and we got a lot of little hints of it yesterday, a little bit about my take on the keto stuff and some of the science behind keto and ketogenesis. And then I'm going to talk about genetics, the genetics of the metabolic disorders. And it's going to be a drive-through, fast path through it, but we gave you lots of resources on the digital downloads page. But I want to get you into a framework of incorporating that into one of the steps. So who remembers what the steps are? Okay, so assess, right? We're going to do a lot of that today, and I'm going to teach you how to incorporate the using what we teach about the polyvagal stuff and the genetics into that assess step, along with Dr. Hopkins is going to talk about in-depth blood testing. And then tomorrow, assess is a big step, guys, because it's the one that a lot of people are missing. They just haven't gotten the right assessment. So all the digging and all that, and we're going to do more on assessment tomorrow. So we're spreading it out so that you get repetition, repetition, repetition. Okay, step two. What's step two? Connect. So we're going to have a lot of connection stuff today as well. Laura Fine and Kimberly Ward are going to share methods of helping you to break through some of the barriers to connection that you might have with folks who are, you know, maybe in a PTSD situation or are locked, and that's part of what they need to do for their transformation. So what's the next step? Plan, right? And that we're going to go into major detail. Our segment tomorrow is, now what do I do with all this, right? How do I put this into action? How do I actually create plans that are going to help people get to where they want to go? And then what's after plan? What's that? What's before that? Boulders, I saw that, right? The pictures, right? The slides are really valuable, right? The boulders, right? Get the boulders out of the way. Right? Find out what they are. You're going to find out a lot about that during the assessment, but you actually have to remove them and work with them to remove those boulders, and that's part of it. And all the things we're talking about are helping you with that because, you know, the connection piece, the trauma piece, the diet, they may be on the wrong supplements, they may be on medications that are throwing them off, right, and interacting with their nutrients. So we're going to help you with that piece as well. So then the last step was reassess, right? That's one that's missed so much. And so all of the steps, all of the things we're teaching you are going to fit into one of those 5 steps. So yesterday we had some speakers, and I just wanted to get an idea from you. Who embodied or taught us some things about the assess Or who? Which of the speakers? All right, let's do the opposite. When I was studying, this is a study tip, right? When I'm studying and I want to learn information, I create charts and I organize the material in all different ways of accessing it. So I'll give you an example. If I'm trying to memorize all the muscles and where they insert and what they do, I'll make a chart that says muscle and then origin, insertion, action, right? But then I'm like, but I want to be able to put that into my brain in a lot of different ways because you never know what situation is going to need to pull that out. So then I'll go, okay, I'm going to make another chart. All of the origins, right? So the biceps, the femur, you know, and I list all the origins and which of the muscles attach there, right? And then I'll list another chart that's all the actions, like, you know, flex the arm, extend the leg, whatever. And then I put all of those actions down. And it's just an example, right? Same thing with nutrition. Here are all the nutrients, and here's what they do, and here's where they're digested. And we have a module, it's probably one of my favorite modules in the whole program, called micronutrients. It's about 30 hours long, would you say? At least. Because I go through every nutrient. What does it do? What does a deficiency look like? What does an excess look like? Where in the digestive tract does it get absorbed? Where do you get it? What foods do you get it in? So everything for about every one of these things, and what factors interfere with its absorption. So we have that chart. So I haven't made this chart yet because I'm in so busy, but I want to make this chart, and anybody wants to volunteer to make this chart, I want to make it with here's all of the nutrients, and here's all the nutrients, and here's all the interactions between the nutrients. Now, we have all that in the modules, but wouldn't it be nice to have probably a huge spreadsheet, maybe like this, with all that stuff? So it's a way of organizing information and putting it into your brain so you're not just sitting rotely reading going, memorize this, memorize that, memorize this, because I'm not a memorizer. People would say, what do you mean you don't have a good memory? Because I remember all kinds of biochemical pathways, but I remember movement. Remember yesterday the verb talk? I remember things by the movement. What does it do in the body? Like, I could tell you what that tubercle is called over there, I don't know, but the muscle that attaches it does this, and, you know, movement, right? So when there's movement in my studying, and I end up never looking at my charts, but I remember and do well on tests because I made the charts, right? Because I'm kinesthetic and I'm using movement to create. So it's just a little study hint. You turn that on for me, great. To help you along. So what I want to do is I'm going to ask the question I started with. I got off on that tangent because of the question I was asking. So I'm going to just go through our speakers yesterday and think about the steps and which one you feel like what they covered really embodied that step. Okay? So ocean. Planning, I heard that. I see him as a planner, right? Action, do it. And everybody covers all of them, obviously. But Mike, assess for sure, yeah. And reassess, too. I see him because he's like, let's do this thing, but then let's see how it worked, right? He said, don't just do this thing. See how it reacts in the body, right? So he's a big reassess, I think. All right, who else do we have? Trisha. Is Trisha in the room? Yeah. Connect. Yeah, she's a big connector, right? Connect with people from the heart. Help them to identify what's causing this behavior. Who else do we have? Anna. Dr. Kabeka. Assess. Yeah, she's big on assess. Yeah, she's big on assess, but she's big on connect as well. So, yeah. Who else do we have? We had Trina on live stream. It was hard to, she was playing, I think. She was big into like, this is what you do. Do this, use this clay and that clay. And that's like a plan, laying out, here's your dental hygiene plan that's going to support you and everything else. What's that? A little bit of? Obstacles. Thank you. Absolutely. Obstacles. What's that? Yes, I think that's what I would put her at. Absolutely. All right, so what I want to do, What I want to do is we're going to take 5 minutes, okay? We're going to do connect right at the beginning. I want you to take 5 minutes and find a partner or two, you probably do two or three, and just review yesterday. Like, what were the things that are standing out in your mind that you learned yesterday? Because here's the thing, reinforcement, reinforcement, reinforcement. When you learn something and then you move on and then learn something else, that first thing falls off the radar. So I want you to take 5 minutes, so set me a timer for 5 minutes, and then we'll go ahead and play some music, and at the end of 5 minutes, I'll have you come back. All right? So try to share with at least two people, and just share with each other, what were the big takeaways from yesterday? What did you learn yesterday that you're inspired by? So go for it. So is that helpful, useful? To be able to, because sometimes all that stuff, I know I go to conferences all the time and I go, I want to remember this. And then the next day I'm like, what was it that guy said yesterday? What was it that I was going to remember and use? All right. So who would like to share one thing that you feel like from yesterday really stands out? Something you learned that you didn't already know, or something you got a new perspective on. Okay. Wait. Stand up, say your name. And then when she says her name, we're going to say hi.
Hi, I'm Lynn.
Hi, Lynn.
I learned a lot about the importance of the mouth and the dental practice, and I had no idea of how much it affected the microbiome, and it's really interesting.
Awesome. Yes. Who learned that yesterday? Who thought that was a really great perspective? Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Let's give her a kiss. Mwah. Awesome. Who else has something they want to share that they learned yesterday that is like, wow, that's a really new perspective or a different perspective that I want to use? Okay. We'll come over here. Here we go. Your name?
Hi, I'm Jan from Pennsylvania.
Hi, Jan.
The point that stood out the most for me was ocean's perspective, especially when we're dealing with people coming from the medical perspective or companies or the medical professionals themselves. Don't assume that they're there trying to hurt and come at a certain way. Find a common thread that you have in terms of what the intent is and work together to find the common good for everybody.
Yes. Just give her a kiss. That's awesome. And I'm going to relate that back to when I was raising my kids, and I would read every child rearing book I could get my hands on. And one of them, I think it was Kids Are Worth It. And the perspective that I really loved in there was assume positive intent. Your kid didn't wake up that morning and say, I'm going to make this a miserable day for mom. How can I do that best? Right? The same thing in life, right? Your boss doesn't wake up saying that. Your kids don't wake up saying that. Your teachers don't wake up saying that. And except for maybe the high executives in Monsanto, I have some doubts about, don't wake up saying, how can I ruin the world today? How can I make people sick today, right? So we need to assume that positive intent. And some of them do have a profit motive over, really our health and the health of the planet motive. But maybe it's not so much from a place of disgust. Although I will tell you a little story I heard at an ocean event, and people were sharing like who they were and what they did. And one guy said that he used to work for one of these big conglomerates, and he was marketing, and he was a really good marketer, and he did a great job. And he was at a meeting with the executives of, I think it was, food executives. So big food meets big pharma in a meeting, and they're discussing stuff. And the guy from, I don't remember which of the companies, but said to the guy from Nabisco, you keep making them sick, and we'll keep selling them drugs. He quit that day. It was his company, I guess. He quit his job that day, right? Maybe he said it in jest, but that's what's happening, right? Big food makes them sick. Big pharma, under the guise of curing them, sometimes makes them sicker. Sometimes helps, right? Drugs are not always bad, right? You need them in a lot of times. But sometimes it makes it worse, right? So there's this, this thing. And we are in the power to change that. Just not like Ocean said, you may not be an activist like he is, right? You're not going to go out there and meet with Coke and Nestle and all that kind of stuff, but you're going to, in your communities, you're going to put that in their minds. Did you have something?
Were talking about this stuff making people sick, you know, if you will look, I guess the thing that bothers me the most, because as you know, I have a special needs child, and the things that bother me the most is they will tell you all of these side effects for the one drug on the television, right? So think about the fact, like Ocean said, how many drugs do they have people on at a time?
Yeah.
So they never ever do studies, and there's no way, I don't think, that they could do those studies to intermingle them all together. So can you only imagine if you put all of those big side effects for every drug, and then you put people on 5 to 10 drugs at a time, mm-hmm. what exactly is that doing to the body?
Right. And a big part of your assess, thank you. That's really awesome. Give her a kiss for that. Mwah! Because that perspective is so true, and that's part of assess, right? Assess is not just what lab tests can I run and what do the lab tests say. It's talking to the person, right? It's finding out what exact medications there might be on and looking them up. I mean, you can go online now these days and you can look up the drug, you can look up the interactions, you can look up what nutrients it interferes with. And minimally, right, you can't take them off of drugs, but you can tell them, like, this drug is interfering with your body's metabolism of vitamin B12. B12 is super important for your nervous system, maybe related to those tingly things you're feeling in your feet. And it may not be that you're not getting enough B12. It may not be that this drug is taking it away, so you're going to need super high doses. And so those are all the things that you need to know about. Like, you need to understand how these things work together and interact with each other. And that's why we're bringing you together with all this information here. I mean, there's really just so much I can do in 3 days. I always say that in a webinar. There's just so much I can teach you in an hour and a half. Well, there's just so much I can teach you in 3 days, right? But I want to get to as much as you can to get you started. And then, you know, if you continue to work with us and get involved with us, we can go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. Because it has to happen, right? This has to change. We're going in the wrong direction with this. It has to change. And you're part of it. So before I go on to my topic for today, which is I love this topic. I've been just like digging into this, the polyvagal theory. But I want to just remind, some of you had to leave early yesterday, and we had an amazing young woman come up on the stage. She's going to come up again, and then just say hi. Come on up, Abigail, and talk to us about a charity that she started. And who was not here when Abigail spoke yesterday? Because the room was quite, okay, so I just want to, she's not going to do her whole spiel again, but I want her to just share the name of your charity, and why you started it, and what its goal is, like what it does, who it serves.
Okay. Can I please have the microphone?
Oh, of course. No, you have to shout. She is amazing. Like, she's 11 years old, and she knew to ask that, right?
So, hello, everybody. My name is Abigail Grace Garland, and I'm 11 years old. My charity that I started with my family at age 7 is called the Peace Through Participation Charitable Foundation, and it supports the self-worth and self-esteem in children from all races, religions, and regions of the world.
Awesome. And they do that through education to the education to the parents to see how do you raise kids with self-esteem, because we know how hard it is raising kids and how it, you know, how important hugs and that kind of stuff is, and how sometimes it gets shoved under when people don't have enough money, they're working hard to pay the rent and all that. So they do education for the parents, and they also fund workshops. Once a year, they do a big workshop for about 500 of these kids coming together and teaching them self-esteem and how they can stand out in the world. And I'm so excited to have her here and for the work that she's doing in the world. So far, we've collected $2,700 for them. I'm so excited. Thank you for your generosity. And she had a big goal, so we're going to try to help her reach this goal. If you participate, there's a whole bunch of prizes that you are entitled to get at different levels. And at each level of participation, so if you donate $250, you're going to get, if you donate $500, let's just say, You're going to get J.J. Virgin's You, the Brand course, which is going to help you identify your niche, your target audience. How do you promote to them? You're going to get Steph Jackson's Functional Probiotics Home Study course. And after you hear her speak this morning, you're going to go, oh, yeah, I want to study with her, which she sells for $1,000. And who here has taken it? Many of you have taken it, right? No, you haven't taken Steph's probiotic class, I thought. A lot of you have. Lynn has. Friendly Flora, but she has her practitioner training. You guys got it as a bonus when you joined. Maybe you haven't gotten to it yet. Yeah, I think you did. Anyway, it's an amazing course, which is for practitioners to help you customize the microbiome and how to make the foods and, you know, whatever supplements you take. And then in addition, the top five at a minimum donation of $500 are going to get an EBD Recovery Masterclass, which Cassia sells for like $1,500. She's in the middle of a launch right now. And Dr. Allen Hopkins donated a $500 lab package to the top five. So you'll donate $500 to the charity and you'll get a $500 coupon to buy labs for yourself or your family members. So, I mean, it's kind of like a no-brainer. If you feel inclined to help these kids who are underprivileged, who don't have parents, who have the knowledge and the means to provide this beautiful growing up situation that she had with the nurturing and the dad and, you know, mom and all this stuff, then I would say, you know, just go back there. And she's back there. Her mom and dad are back there. Her mom's an eye doctor. Her dad's a professional speaker. And part of this collection is going towards eye care for underprivileged and various things. If there's anything else you want to say and add.
So there's three specific reasons or three specific categories. We do personal appearance, personal growth, and then personal environment. For personal appearance, the main topic is eye care. And last year alone, we saw over 30,000 school children in need. And the second...
Oops.
Hello.
There you go.
And the second category is personal growth, and that we do the annual Girls Self-Esteem Conference, which last year alone hosted over 500 girls. And then the third pillar funds the virtual and live workshops for parents who want to raise conscious, confident, and compassionate children.
Awesome. So let's give a hand to her. And I want you to imagine what the world would be like if all of our youth had her confidence, her competence, and her compassion, right? Thank you. So at the break, you can go to the back and you can read this form and you can donate whatever feels right to you in your heart. So thank you, thank you. So I am going to make sure I'm on right. Okay, let's get into it. What have you learned? We already talked about that. We learned that our system is broken. We learned that if we keep pulling the battery out, the house is going to burn down. You're going to end up like that, like my sister and brother-in-law did. That was the end of their days in their 40s. You know that we have a mission, and our mission is to transform healthcare and provide root cause healthcare to the masses. And when we work together, instead of Mission Impossible, and when we have people like Ocean out there doing what he's doing and all these speakers that we're bringing together, it is possible and it is the future. And as Thomas Edison said, I'll say it with the different words, the health practitioner of the future will give no medicine but will interest the person in diet, nutrition, and the care of the human frame. And I might have gotten that backwards, but that's what we do. And we are the healthcare practitioners of the future, and the future is now, and now is the time to stop needless suffering. So that's why we're here. Our new toolbox is very different than the old toolbox. We talked about the big why I do what I do, and we asked you to tune into why you do what you do. And we talked about that five-step process so that when those complex cases come in, you're not scared out of your britches. You're like, yes, right? And the top pieces are assess, connect, plan, remove the obstacles, and reassess. And it's kind of a spiral because you get to another place. Now you go, okay, you reassess, now you're in a different place, and then you go through the process again, and you have to replan and all, and you just keep going until you get that person to unstoppable health. It's not just a matter of disease and symptom-free. We get them into balance, and then we get them to be at the pinnacle of unstoppable, right? Not everybody's going to make it all the way up there, but we'd like to get them at least into balance, right? Not just symptom-free. We want to get them into balance, and drugs get them symptom-free, and that's what we do. We talked about nutritional endocrinology and the fact that there's a gazillion hormones in the body, and it controls everything. And guess what? Every choice that you make, every choice you teach your clients to make, controls the hormones, gets them into balance. And we talked about your verb. Shout out your verb. Just on the count of three, I'm going to have everybody shout it out so we have the energy of all these amazing verbs in the room. So one, two, three. Empower! Woohoo! I love it. It's energy, it's movement, and that's what we need to do. We need to be the movement. We talked about the metabolic disease timeline and that you can detect these things for people 30 years before they begin. And we're going to talk more about the stuff. We talked about insulin resistance and how it's at the heart of so many of these metabolic disorders and so many of these diseases. We talked about the early signs and symptoms that most doctors overlook, and these are the tip of the iceberg. These are common things that people show up with, and it's just your age, honey. You're just stressed, honey. Take this antidepressant. Just take some laxatives, and your bowels will move. They're not talking about what's really going on. So we talked about fasting. Mike Mutzel did a great job of talking about fasting. We touched on keto. We're going to go into more of that today and tomorrow. We talked about the pillars that we all need to, within the obstacles. There's going to be obstacles in one of these seven pillars, usually all seven. We gave you an assessment that you're welcome to use on yourself first. Use it on your family members. Use it on your clients, and then map it out on that little graph for them, that little thing, so they see, whoa, all I need to do to get healthy is have fun. I can do this, right? Or, whoa, my diet needs some work, but my mindfulness is really good, that meditation practice and all. We talked about being, you know, to do what we're doing, we're the blue fish, we're not the goldfish. When we're swimming in the other direction, and that's a good thing. And a lot of times you're going to feel alone. You're going to feel like, oh my God, what am I doing? Why am I not just like everybody else? You are, because that's what you're called to do, and that's how you're going to make the world different. You're going to jump out of that bowl and into a new bowl. And you need the support, the education, the knowledge, some marketing skills, some connection skills, and you're gonna be making changes. You probably already are. This I didn't talk about, and I want to talk about this because this is really, in my opinion, the three pieces that need to be in balance from you, from a skills perspective and from a living perspective, in order for you to feel like you can do things as a successful practitioner out there. And you're going to get an actual physical. Actually, I forgot to tell you guys, can you pull out these charts, these unstoppable formula charts? Where's Linda? Does she, you know where those are? The handout. It was from the printer. And we're going to give you this because I want you to assess it today. We're going to talk more about it tomorrow, right? We're going to fill this in and see what you need to do to fill any gaps that you already have. And if you go through this, there's little boxes you can check on them where you're at. So basically, your own self-care, it's called self-care mastery, we call it, right? You're taking care of you. Your health is being addressed. A lot of times as practitioners, what we're doing is we're taking care of them at the expense of us. If we're a mom with a special needs child, right, we're taking care of them at the expense of us. We need to take care of us too, or we can't take care of them, right? So that's really important. And we, in our program, we give people access to all of our consumer programs. Anybody in NEPT has access to all those programs because we want you to go through them and take care of you. And it's super important. So I give you a checklist of the obstacles. I give you a checklist of the different body systems. And what I want you to do is take this away. And tonight, or on a break today, is just fill this out because we're going to review it tomorrow. I'm going to give you specific strategies. Like, where do you fall short? How do you rate yourself on fun? Yeah, I have fun every 3 or 4 weeks. Zero, right? On a 0 to 10 scale, just give yourself a score. Oh, yeah, I have fun every day. I do puzzles. I go water skiing. Who lives near the beach? Somebody must live near the beach. Yeah. Yeah. Do you go to the beach every day?
Not every day, but I go to the beach as often as
you can. Go to the beach every day. Because putting your feet in the sand and getting those negative ions, it's going to clean you. If you live near a beach, go to it every day. I don't live near a beach, and I wish I did, because if I did, I would go to it every day. But what is fun for you? And you're going to fill that in, and then at the bottom, how are those body systems working for you? How are those body systems working for you? How's your digestion? How's your blood sugar? So that's your assessment piece. The middle is your clinical skills. And that's what most of us left-brained, you know, learner, scientific types focus on. But we also need the self-care, and we also need the business mastery as well, or we're not going to get anywhere. So there's a lot of different areas on there. Yeah, and we'll talk about that, the map on the back tomorrow, so that'll be part of our next steps thing. But in the middle, there's pieces to this, right? You've got to be able to do the assessments. How comfortable are you with all these assessments I've listed? How comfortable are you with putting together plans and understanding these systems? So just give yourself little checks like, nope, I'm not good there. Yep, I'm good there. And we'll help you to find what you need to move it forward. And then on the last end, this is where most people in our space fall short. It's because we have huge hearts and we want to help everybody. And we're full of good information in our heads, but we don't know how to get it out to the world. Well, it's sleazy to market. It's sleazy to sell. And people will give you that, well, if you really cared, you wouldn't charge me for this. Like, really? Who's going to feed my kids? Who's going to pay my mortgage? Who's going to pay for my continuing education? Who's going to pay for my website and the ways that I get out there? We actually had somebody on a call one day. Well, that sounds like a great program, but I don't have $500, and you should be giving it away for free. I'm like, I gave this away for free, an hour and a half worth of deep, valuable information, but I'd have to go get a day job if you want me to give this away, and then I can't help anybody anymore, right? Because I'm sitting in at work doing whatever stuff, so they give me money so I can buy my kids food. So you need to learn those kind of things. So I want you to just go through these. We'll go through this in depth tomorrow, but I want you to go through this today and give yourself scores and really identify where you're going, because it's part of the process, right? Plan. You have to assess. You're going to use this to assess where your business is. What's the health of your business, your practice, your strategies? And then how are we going to plan? We're going to use that, and we have an implementation session tomorrow. I highly recommend people never leave my conferences early, because we do the big grand prize raffle, and then we do the, now what do you do with this information, always at the end of the day. And if I could fit it into 2.5 days, I would, but this really, ideally, this conference should be 4 days or 5 days long to really get in what I want to get in for you to be able to walk away. So how's this look? Does this look like a really cool thing? This was something that was a brainchild that came up, and I'm like, how do I map this out? And what do you know? And it just kind of flowed. And about 2 years ago, we created this chart. So I'm really excited about it. We call it the Unstoppable Formula, and the Unstoppable Practitioner Formula, because we want you as a practitioner to be unstoppable. Same way we want you in your personal health to be unstoppable. And so when we realize that, it's like, oh, it's the UP formula. How do we lift everybody up? How do we lift ourselves up? So, good. Breathe. Focus on your heart. Focus on all the love in your heart, all the compassion in your heart, all the generosity. Clearly you care. Clearly you love people and love the world, and you want to make a difference because you're here. You're spending 3 days of your time to be here. So put your hand on your heart and just breathe. Breathe into your heart space. Know that there are answers out there for helping you to reach all those people who want you, need you, and for whom you are uniquely qualified to reach. There are times I hear folks say, well, why should I do this? You're so good at it. They're not going to want to come see me when they can come see you. And that's not true. There's the people who are uniquely qualified to see you. There's the people who are qualified to see me. There's a connection. It's a connection thing. And you're going to appeal to people that I won't, and I'll appeal to people that you won't. And we're all here together. So breathe into that. And I want you to just fill your heart with appreciation, joy, love. And I'm going to ask you to do is radiate that out into the room. Have that appreciation go through your body, through the ends of your extremities, your tips of your fingers, the tips of your toes, so your whole body is just like, it's just throbbing with appreciation. And then send that out to the room. Just send the energy out. Those of you who are into energy healing, you know that we have a space around us that we can radiate out and that we can shift other people's energy spaces and head spaces. And that's a big piece of the heart math, and we teach that in our heart math training, that there's an energy field around, and they have a technique called heart math, but anyway, I'm drawing a blank on the name of the technique. I'm not good at names. But it's the one where you radiate it out. And I've seen this where, do you ever walk into a room and you feel like, oh my God, the energy in this room is just, I want to get out of here? Do you ever feel that? Who's ever felt that? Yeah. And who's ever walked into a room and just like, wow, or certain people you're with and you just feel like, because they're exuding their energy in and out. And when you can master your energy and you can radiate your energy out, you can overcome the negative energies, because the strongest energy is going to win, right? And there's like negative Nellies in that room, but you can create this positivity, this joy, this appreciation, this love. You can have them start feeling it. And I'll tell you a quick story. One of my clients, she's in our practitioner training, and she had a husband who she loved and adored, but every morning she'd get up and she'd meditate and she'd go in the kitchen and she'd be making her smoothie, and he would walk in with like that grumpy thing, and it would just like suck her energy down. So I taught her, heart lock-in is this technique. It just came to me. And I taught her how to do heart lock-in. I taught her how to use and get herself in that space and radiate it out. And the next day, she went in the kitchen, and she's making her smoothie, and she's just doing this, and the husband walks in, and she's like radiating out this positivity and love and appreciation to him. And he turned to her and said, what are you doing? And she said, what do you mean? I'm making a smoothie. And he said, no, what are you doing? What are you doing to me? And she says, what do you mean? He said, I walked in the room. I was all like pissy because I have to do this at work and this person's not doing this. I walked in the room and I just suddenly felt like I got hit with this wave of joy and appreciation. What are you doing to me? How do I learn how to do it? Is that beautiful? Right? He felt it and he wanted it. So when you have that negative Nelly, you're empathic, you're compassionate with them. You're not going to say, just smile, everything will be okay. That won't work. No, but you're hearing them, but you're re-exuding love, support, and they will feel it, and they will feel it. Okay? Is that helpful? This is part of activating the vagus nerve, right? And you may have been online and you've looked up how do you activate the vagus nerve. I'll give you a little rundown for those of you who are not familiar with the vagus nerve. It's this big nerve. It's one of the cranial nerves. It's cranial nerve 11. And it comes from the brainstem and down, and it activates the muscles in the neck, the muscles in the shoulders, the heart, the lungs, the digestive tract, and everything down in here, right? Down into the pelvis. And it's part of the parasympathetic nervous system. What's it part of? Parasympathetic. And the parasympathetic is one branch. The sympathetic is the other branch of what system? Anybody know? Autonomic nervous system. Why is it called the autonomic nervous system? It happens automatically. So I can say, move my hand here, here, here. I'm not consciously thinking that, but that's what my intention is. And I can intentionally stimulate the nerve supply from my spinal cord out to whatever part of my body I can control. Your heart beats whether you think about it beating or not, right? Your lungs breathe whether you say, okay, lung, it's been 4 seconds, time to breathe again. You don't have to do that. It's all automatic. So it's part of the autonomic nervous system. The parasympathetic branch, that's the part that does rest and digest and reproduce, and that's where all the healing happens. The sympathetic is how we stay alive. Gets us away from tigers and lions and bears, oh my, right? It lets us fight and flight. But there's another part of that, fight, flight, or freeze. freeze is actually not the sympathetic nervous system. It's the parasympathetic. So the polyvagal theory is new over the last 5 to 10 years. Stephen Porges started writing about it, and now a lot of people are writing about it. And he's saying that the vagus nerve, we're thinking, is this parasympathetic, it's all the good stuff, and we want to make sure it's working for us. There's actually two branches, the ventral branch in the front, the dorsal branch in the back. And the dorsal is freeze. Freeze. The ventral is connection, community, support, healing. So we want to activate and teach our clients to activate the ventral part of the vagus nerve. So that's all the stuff that the vagus nerve controls. It's a pretty important nerve, would you say? Would you say yes? Right? This is Porges' book, The Polyvagal Theory. Safety, danger, and life threatening. So safety is ventral. Danger? Danger is fight or flight. Psh, psh, punch around. The life threatened, that's the freeze. Whoops, I just lost my slides. Freeze. And what they say is like when an animal, like a zebra, is being hunted down and they know they're about to get eaten, they just pretend they're dead. They lay down and pretend they're dead. Hopefully the predator goes, oh, no, I don't do dead. I'm not a vulture. I could kill him myself. But if they're going to get eaten, they can go in peace, basically, right? So we want to teach people how to, as much as possible, stay in their ventral. And I do this because one of the ways to stimulate the ventral vagus is what? Hugs. Hugs, feeling safe, feeling and you're in a community of people who love you, who are not attacking you. So I read this book recently. Absolutely adore this book. I think it should be in all your libraries. The Healing Power of the Vagus Nerve. And it's so well written and so simply written. It's a guy who's a craniosacral therapist in Europe, and he started, you know, training with Porges, learned about this stuff, and he's developed techniques that are, some of them are hands-on, and some of them that are self-techniques that you can do with your clients, and it's beautifully explained. I just love it. So this is taken from his, I had the audiobook with the PDF companion, so this is taken straight from his. One of the ways to assess whether your vagus nerve is not working properly is to look at uvula in the back of your throat. So when you open your mouth wide, that uvula or yawn, or it should go, you know, it should stay straight up and down like that middle picture. But if it goes to one side or the other, there's probably a problem with the vagus nerve. So it's a simple little thing that you would teach people to look at themselves. The ventral vagus supplies all that good stuff, the heart and the lungs. And the dorsal vagus supplies the digestive tract. When we're in a sympathetic state, the digestive tract doesn't get activated, right? It freezes. The valves close. Everything gets stopped so that you can get away from the tiger. And that's controlled by the dorsal vagus. And these are in your slides, so you can read the little descriptions. I wanted to leave them in. But the connection with migraine headaches and vagus nerve, right? We want to activate the vagus nerve to help people with headaches because it supplies, you'll see in the first three pictures, it supplies these muscles in the neck called the sternocleidomastoid neck muscles. It also supplies the trapezius, and there's different kinds of headaches that people may have. Trigger points in those muscles. So doing some vagus nerve exercises in addition to the actual, you know, massage, hands-on type of things can be super helpful for people who have chronic migraine headaches. The diaphragm, it controls the diaphragm. And if the diaphragm tightens and the stomach rises up, especially happens in pregnant women when there's extra weight, there are somebody who's obese, it goes up, but under stress, right, the stomach can creep up. And there's a little thing called the lower esophageal sphincter there. And if the lack of vagal tone, we're going to see that pop up. And we get a hiatal hernia, which causes reflux. So you're going to see a lot of that. And it's not a pepsid AC deficiency. It's not a deficiency of these medications. It's actually a problem in the nervous system that needs to be addressed. But then also in dealing with hiatal hernias and esophagitis, you've got to deal with the damage to the tissue. You can't just get them calm and it goes away. You actually need to deal with the tissues, and we teach protocols for that in the digestive module, but like things like, you know, slippery elm and DGL and other things, other herbs like that. An interesting thing happened with my son, which really brought this position home. He fell and he broke a couple of ribs. He fell off the bike, broke a couple of ribs. He said, ma'am, it's a couple of ribs. He lives in D.C., at school, and he called, it's just a couple of ribs. I'm in a lot of pain. I know it'll go away 6 weeks. I don't need to go to a doctor. I'm like, here's the couple of things to look for. Make sure it didn't puncture a lung. And, you know, I gave him some signs to look for. And a few days later, he says, Mom, ever since I broke my ribs, I can't eat spicy food. Whenever I eat spicy food, I get like burning severe pain. And this is a kid who eats like, you know, if the fire hot, like four peppers is hot, he goes to five, you know. He loves spicy food, and I'll taste something and go, wow, you're going to love this, it's spicy. He goes, no, it's mild. So he couldn't eat spicy food, and we finally did get him x-rayed because it didn't look like their rib was healing all that well, and he had a little hiatal hernia. He didn't have it before the accident. It was the stress, right? And then the connection, and probably affected the diaphragm, and he had this little thing. So I explained that to him, and it's fine now. It's been several weeks. But that's the idea, right? People are under a lot of stress, so you can't just give them the over-the-counter medications. You can't just give them DGL and slippery elm and expect that, hey, stay off of gluten, DGL and slippery elm, and you're going to be fine with this burning pain. No. You've got to address the real problem. And in most people, stress is a huge problem. Many have PTSD from serious things like being in a war and being beaten and being molested. And some it's PTSD from an emotional thing, a traumatic loss, right? So the vagus nerve inhibition can result in, we talked about migraines, COPD. In that book, he talks about this guy who was he came to see him, and he had a second floor office, and the guy came up and he walked in, he's panting at COPD. It took him three stops along the one staircase to get up there. And when he got up there, he found, you know, he did some of these evaluations, figured out the vagus nerve stuff, did a technique I'm going to show you. And he said to the guy, go down the stairs and come back up. And he said, you got to be kidding. It took me 15 minutes to come up your stairs. I had to stop three times. He goes, no, seriously. And he went down and up, no problem. Right. So COPD is another one that we don't even think about that being a problem, because chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Memory problems affects the brain, right? It affects the acetylcholine. It affects the other transmitters. Digestion problems, and we talked already about hiatal hernia, but other digestive problems. People say, I eat, and it just feels like it just sits there, and they're not digesting. They have constipation, fainting. Right? You've heard of vasovagal syncope? Who's heard of that? Vasovagal syncope? Fainting as a result of the vagus nerve being lack of stimulation. Heart problems, you know, people that get problems with arrhythmias can be the vagus nerve. Inflammation, it actually can create inflammation in various parts of the body, and hormonal imbalances. So the book is a great way to go in depth with this, but understanding basic anatomy and physiology is super important for all of this. And I'm really a big fan that we all need to know anatomy, physiology, and biochemistry. Then we can understand pathophysiology, what happens when things go wrong. And that's how we teach. That's how I teach, is in that sequence. So these are important things to be looking at. And how do you activate it? Well, one of the easiest ways is to slow down the breathing and make the breathing exhale twice as long as the inhale, right? Because the exhale is when we're putting people into parasympathetic, activating the vagus nerve. So everybody try that right now. Do 5 seconds of inhale and then 10 seconds of exhale. That's gonna activate it, right? Slowing it down, 5 to 7 beats per minute. Slow the breathing down. The Valsalva maneuver, who knows what the Valsalva maneuver is? Okay? You guys do a Valsalva maneuver almost every day. Hopefully you're doing it 3 times a day. When you have a bowel movement, right? It's like you're pushing and you're holding your breath like that. That's the Valsalva maneuver, and that can activate the vagus nerve. So, and that's why they say coffee enemas are, they can activate the vagus nerve as well. A diving reflex where you splash cold water on the face or stick your tongue in cold water and hold it there. That will activate it. Some of these are kind of uncomfortable ones, and some of them are more comfortable. Humming, go ahead and hum. You're activating your vagus nerve. Gargling. They say gargling till it's so hard you gargle that you get tears in your eyes. I'm not sure you have to get the tears in your eyes, but gargling. Gag reflex, stick a tongue depressor down the throat and get the gag reflex. That activates the vagus nerve. Like I said, some of these are good ones, and some of them are not so comfortable. Singing loudly, coffee enemas. Somebody has said, if I have to, if it's the last resort, I'll do a coffee enema. But can we please figure out how I cannot have to do a coffee enema? I don't want to have to do it. And then connection and hugging. And hugging, you have to hug long enough. So those quick, oh, nice to see yous, those don't really activate it. You hug, and you're going to feel your body go, and you're just going to feel yourself drop in. And Dr. Ali says what, 30 seconds? Where is she? 20 seconds? 20? Yeah, 20-second hugs, right? That's a rule of thumb. So, and best heart-to-heart. So we all go to hug each other, and we're not heart-to-heart, right? Heart-to-heart. And it's a little awkward when you first try to do that with people who aren't aware. But this is how we activate. And these are the things, simple things, right? It's a lot easier to give somebody, I need you to get 5 20-second hugs than I need you to give up your bread and your cheese. Which one do you think people are more likely to do? Right away. So these are ways that you can give people things to do right away that are going to make a huge difference. So this is the technique, and the way it is, I'm in a dress, so I'm not going to lay down and do it. If anybody wants to come up here and demonstrate and is willing to lay down, I'll show you how to do this maneuver. But otherwise, you can just look at the picture. Nobody? You want to come up? Come up. And this is something that if you are in a hands-on practice, if you're a massage therapist, a chiropractor, physical therapist, you can have somebody get on your table and you can have them do this, but then you teach them how to do this at home. He calls it the basic maneuver, basic exercise. And it's basically helping to reset the upper cervical. So if you don't mind just laying down on the stage. Thank you, Bobby. You're such a sport. All right, lay back. Okay, so you're going to intertwine your fingers like this. Okay, and then you're going to put them behind your head. So intertwine your fingers just like that. No, the other way. There, and then put it behind your head. And you're going to have it so that it's positioned right at the base of your skull. And you're going to feel the tips of your fingers on your cervical, the top cervical vertebrae and the occipital. But you're also going to feel that you want to be able to feel it with your fingers, and you want to feel the sensation of that on your neck. You see what I'm saying? Like you want to really tune into the both ways. You feel it? Okay, now close your eyes. And as you lay there, without moving your head, I want you to move your eyes towards the right. Keep your eyes closed. Keep your head straight. Move them. Yeah, you're looking towards the right, but without moving your head. Okay. You want to hold that until you feel a sigh. And it will happen where we don't have time to do that right here fully. You do that until, and then you do it to the other side. And it's something you teach people. They can probably do it in 5 to 10 minutes. And if they do that daily, they're dropping in. And he has seen, and this is one of the maneuvers he did with the COPT guy, and got him to be able to walk up the stairs. You do it one way and then the other way. Right? One way, and then the other way. Until you get a sigh. And then the other way. Or a yawn. Yes, thank you. Or a yawn. Just breathe. It doesn't specify any specific way. Okay? And then you're putting it back here. I mean, you can all do it right now, but you're not going to get the same effect because it's the gravity and the weight of it on there. But practice it. Practice in your room, right? Read the book. You can get all the details. He's got the step-by-step how to do it. Thank you, Bobby. A sigh or a yawn. Thank you. Who said that? Yes, it's a sigh or a yawn, right? Everybody, let's give Bobby a big hand. Thank you. What a sport. So these are simple things that you can do to help your people to heal without, you know, them balking. And it's simple things, right? And they'll notice a difference. I have people get the book. I've actually sent it to some of my clients who really needed it and invited them to read through the sections and do it, and they start doing it. There are therapists who specialize in the hands-on, somatic therapists that can actually do the hands-on. And if somebody's, you know, so they probably need to go see someone like that. Okay, any questions so far? Is this helpful? Okay. So the other thing is heart math, which we've been doing, the appreciation and breathing. Tapping, right? Who's done tapping or heard of tapping, right? It's you tap on specific meridian points while you're thinking, you know, and reprogramming your brain. These are all ways. Yeah, there you go. These are all ways. And you know what? You can actually teach people how to get out of anxiety by just doing gentle tapping, like doing this kind of stuff on their fingers if you're anxious, the tips of the meridian points. And then the other thing you can teach them to do is, Lynn calls it butterfly hug. You're basically, and it just helps soothe and calm. She's done that with her kids. All right, and it's part of that hug. You know, if you don't have somebody else to hug, you hug yourself, and get yourself activating that ventral vagus. I love this stuff. It's just such great stuff. Yoga, right? Yoga is a great way to get into parasympathetic. Qigong. Who went to the Qigong class with David this morning? How was that? Awesome, right? That gets you into a parasympathetic state. The chanting that he does, that gets you into a parasympathetic state. Meditation. I do meditation every day. I had a hard time meditating until I got me one of these. Does anybody know what this is? A Muse. It's got my hair on it. I do it every day. I have 766 days straight right now. I've been trying. Yay! Yes. Way to go, right? And birds, it depends. The last few days I haven't had that many birds, but some days I'll get 50 or 100 birds, right? And I do it 10 minutes to 20 minutes. If I'm really in a rush, I just do 3. And it doesn't matter. You know, you tell people, it doesn't matter how long you have, just do it. 1 minute of meditation is better than 0. So it's basically, you turn it on, and it is Bluetooth, so it freaks Lynn out, but we put it on, and it has electrodes in there and then on the scalp, and it reads that. And then there's an app on my phone. You know, I look like a hippie, right? With the Okay, so there's my Muse app. It's an app on the phone, and it reads it. Let me see. There, that shows me 766 days, and it shows me how good I am and how calm I am each day. The ones that have the high bar of blue, I had a lot of calm, and the ones I didn't. So you can see recently I haven't had a whole lot, but some of the days I've had 80 or 75%, but even 50%, 35%. If you do 10 minutes and you have 20%, that's 2 minutes of just complete parasympathetic stimulation, right? We've got to let go of the all or nothing thing. And then we just turn it on. Let's see I don't know if I can do it with you guys listening, but you say start session. And then it'll read the electrodes and it'll, you may have to reposition it because I've got this headset on, so it may not be able to read it. But it basically does this until it gets a good signal. Yeah, the ones behind my ear is not because I have the mic on. And then it says, ding, okay, now focus on your breathing. And it has waves in the background. Yeah, won't do that. It has wave sounds, or you can have the rainforest, or you can have the desert, whatever sounds you want, and it plays these sounds. But here's the thing. You know how the brain goes off. That's just part of meditation, right? Suddenly you're thinking about the grocery list, or this patient that you have to help, or, right, your kid. And it helps you to come back, because when you start to do that, it detects those waves, and then it goes, shh, and you hear the waves crashing, and you go, oh yeah, okay, come back. And then when you're calm, you get the birds, you go, tweet, 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 tweet. They're like, ooh, yay, I'm calm. Then you have to be careful not to have your competitive self go, oh, birds, yay, how do I get more? And then the birds go away, right? So, you know, but it's a tool, whatever tool you want. HeartMath has a little thing you attach to your ear, and it detects your heart rate variability. I wish I had more time to, like, really expand on that. But, you know, that's it for my parasympathetic, my vagal nerve. Like, anything else on that before we move on to a little review of ketones? Yeah. Oh, okay, give me. Okay.
So Justin, what I've just learned about the importance of the vagus nerve is this. They now, at least in certain scientific places, they believe that the vagus nerve has watery surroundings called an interstitium, and that the core of the body, the health of the entire nervous system and body, is stimulate that to make it work right, you stimulate the parasympathetic nervous system, and that with the interstitium, when that's in balance, then your entire vibrational body is basically healthy.
Mm-hmm. So. Awesome, thank you. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's this guy that wrote that book. He's a he's a cranial sacral, and I've been trained in and I love that stuff. I mean, it just, my husband, I just start to do it, and he's like, oh, my God. You know, so, and the kids, when the kids were little, I would do that a lot with them. I just lay them down and just, you know, just put my hands on the cranium and just get them balanced. And it just is, it's so valuable, and it's stuff that isn't really, you know, talked about in Western medicine circles.
So I just wanted to clarify the hiatal hernia story.
Yeah.
So you, with your son, you were able to use the herbs,
Well, I didn't give him. I told him he could do that, but I explained to him what it was, and I told him he needed to relax. And then he went to a chiropractor because I couldn't treat him. He went to a chiropractor who did some work on him and did some ultrasound on the ribs. And he was very scared when the pain wasn't going away. He was also really pissed off because he couldn't go to the gym and work out, and he was feeling like he was getting weak. So he had all this other stress around it. And when I said, okay, it's going to be 6 weeks and it's going to take this time and this is what it's going to take, he was able to relax into it and get the therapy. And when the pain started to go down, because pain is very sympathetic, right? It stimulates the sympathetic nervous system. When the pain was going to start to go down and he knew what was really happening, he calmed into it and he was able to do it. Now, I told him to go on YouTube. There are some hiatal hernia techniques that you can do to adjust a hiatal hernia. So those of you who can touch people, you can learn how to do that and do that. Those of you who can't touch people is by your licensure, you can show them how. You can learn how to do it, watch the video, do it on yourself. I've even just had people go watch the videos and do it on themselves and have miraculous shifts in just within a few days. But you also have to be doing the heal the tissue at the same time, right? Because if you're not healing the tissue. Now for him, it was such an acute thing. And he's young, he didn't have to do anything major, to just his normal diet and just calming down before eating. Like, that's the other thing, heart math or meditation before you eat, to put yourself in parasympathetic, because if you're in sympathetic while you're eating, everything's like, and it doesn't get digested well. Okay?
How long does it take the ribs to heal?
About 6 weeks, but if you haven't gotten, look into getting pulsed ultrasound on them. There's a lot of studies that show, and they show every day, so I would just buy yourself a pulsed ultrasound unit. I mean, you can get a unit for $150, and we actually taught all the people in my Energy Recharge Inner Circle, I don't know if you're on that call, Barbara, but where I was demonstrating for one of our people who had a frozen shoulder thing. And Karen's the one that first taught me about doing ultrasound on yourself at home. Because she, is it okay if I share that story? Karen had a frozen shoulder after she had gotten it pulled out from a dog. You know, the dog, walking the dog, and it jolted her. And I was working on her, and it was getting a little better. Yeah, I was getting a little bit better. But I'm like, you need this every day. And she was like 25 minutes from me at the time. And I'm like, she tried to come more often. I taught her how to use the ultrasound. I taught her daughter how to use the ultrasound machine, but they just couldn't make it work. And so she went online and she bought herself an ultrasound unit, started doing it twice a day on her shoulder. What was it, 2 weeks she had full range? 3 times a day. Holy cow, I've been telling people too. How long did it take? A few weeks? Okay. Okay. But it was like major change after a short period of time.
Yeah. That's the only thing that I could see improvement. That and the heat and the electronic muscle stimulator.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got better than people I know that have had the surgery, and then every time they do something, they have to have surgery again.
They have to have surgery again because they rip it. Yeah, so with the ribs, the studies that were done were with pulsed ultrasound, and you do it once a day. That's what the studies showed, and really majorly enhanced the healing of the ribs. And it was interesting because he had to go to an orthopedic guy because the chiropractor wasn't sure about the positioning of the rib, and he went to the orthopedic. She said, if we find that it isn't healing properly, I thought she was going to say, we're going to have to cut you open and do surgery and put pins. And she said, we're going to have to get you in for ultrasound therapy. And I'm like, the orthopedist said that? Right? So I started researching, and there's a lot of really good studies. Anyway, that's another aside based on your situation. So we have about 13 minutes left in this segment. I'm going to get through a little bit of keto stuff, and whatever we don't, I'll get in the afternoon with the genetics. Yes? You took my mic, baby. I need my mic back. Okay, come over here and give it to Louisa, and then give it back to me. Louisa.
I just had a question on the heart lock-in that you said. So how do you go about to learn about that, to do that? Was that
you
going
log
to heart math?
You log into your site, and you go to the thing we have called Transforming Stress, and we have everything you need. It's all in Transforming Stress on the site.
Good.
Okay?
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, give it back to me, I'll hold it. Yeah. So those of you who are in our program, you can get access to it that way. We have tons of stuff in there. All right, so ketones, burning fat for fuel, the things that you see improvement, in fasting, this was from yesterday, you see improvements in fasting, and most of them are related to the fact that you're in ketosis when you get into fasting. So that would be the improved mental clarity, the autophagy, the insulin sensitivity, blood pressure, triglycerides, cholesterol, inflammation, and reversing of some aging markers. That's all related, and increasing Krebs cycle, which is energy metabolism, so in the mitochondria. So all of these things that we see in fasting is because you're in this state of ketosis, but we can't fast every day for the rest of our lives and stay in autophagy and major ketosis. So we have to learn how to do this and identify who's good for. So that's what I wanted to share with you. This was the measuring ketones, and Dr. Anna talked about how she likes to do it in urine. It's not as accurate. You can't always tell what level it is by the urine. I like to do the blood check. So you can do both. You can do the urine check a few times a day and the blood check once a day. Keto Mojo does that. Another one called the Precision Extra. I have one of those, but the strips are super expensive for ketones, like $3 a strip. Keto Mojos are about $1 a strip, and you're only doing ketones once a day, so it's not like with glucose where you're measuring to get your curves. This was something Mike talked briefly about, so I wanted to make sure I taught you about it. You can't measure autophagy directly, but you can measure the ketone glucose index, and that will give you an idea of whether you're in autophagy and how far in autophagy you are. You can go to the Keto Mojo site, and they actually have a calculator where you can put in your number. In this country, we use the U.S. numbers, and the rest of the world uses Standard International. So you may report your glucose as 85, and in Canada, Europe, or anywhere else in the world, they will report it as like 5 point whatever. I don't even. Conversion is divide your number by 18, and you get the Standard International. So 85 divided by 18 is what? 4 point something, right? So you take that number, and then you divide it by the ketones. And if the larger that number, or you go the opposite way, whichever way it goes, you just have to, it doesn't matter. But you want the ketones larger than the glucose as reported in Standard International units. So if you divide your 85, let's just say it's 80, I don't know how to do that kind of math in my head, but say it's 80, it's 4 point something, right? you then take that number and say you do ketones and your ketones are 1.3. You're in a, you know, there's a little bit of autophagy going on, but not a lot if you look at the chart. But say you're on like day 3 or 5 of a fast and your glucose in our units is 45, which brings it down to, you know, 2 point something, and your ketones are 4 or 5 or 6, which mine often are by then, you're in massive ketosis, right? You're in massive ketosis and major autophagy is likely going on. So when the higher the difference between the ketones and the glucose, the better. So the higher the ketones, the better. Doesn't mean that if they're not, because it takes a lot to get them to be equal. You have to, usually it's fasting. Usually it's going to be fasting. I'm going to be doing more of that fasting mimicking kind of stuff to see if it really is the same, because I've done so much fasting. I do 5-day water fast every 4 to 6 weeks. So that's how often I do it. I don't do the once a day 24-hour thing because the 24 hours is the hardest for me. It's so hard to do that. For me, I can do 5 days, but that first 24 hours is hard. So doing that once a week, like, but I do like a 16 or 18 or even 20 hours most days. So I get that window, but I measure a lot. So I know what numbers will look like based on that. So this is a good index, and it's a really nice thing to have. Ketogenic diets are not for everybody, but if somebody's epileptic, it can be helpful for migraines. It can be helpful for Parkinson's and narcolepsy and Alzheimer's and malignancy and ALS and neurodegenerative diseases, cardiovascular diseases, diabetes, autism, depression, trauma, ischemia, and metabolic disorders. And I'm going to give you a link to a place where these we can get more detail on this. These slides, by the way, are all on the page on the site. So there's some really good science about the brain, and that's what the ketone, that's the major ketone. There's acetoacetic acid, but beta-hydroxybutyrate is the most common one, and if you do exogenous ketones, it's usually beta-hydroxybutyrate. Here's the cool thing. You get 40 ATPs per fatty acid versus 36 per glucose, and that will help the brain, and that will help in epileptic seizures because the neurons are more resilient in the face of the metabolic demands because they have more glucose. One second. It alters brain pH, which affects neuronal activity. It inhibits ion channels and shifts the amino acid metabolism in favor of GABA, which is calming. Right? So this is what the ketones do in the brain, and it increases the influx of nutrients to the brain. So you can see where somebody who's having some neurologic stuff, I've worked with people who, every time this woman tried to lose weight, she had severe neurologic symptoms. And it was like, what toxins are stored in her fat that whenever she would lose it, she would lose her speech sometimes, her vision. She had major stuff, and we just kind of, we had to work with her liver. We had to do a lot of other stuff. She had a lot of genetic SNPs. But what we found was the ketogenic diet worked to get her out of that. Problem was she also had liver issues. So we had to, like, do a lot of balance because she could do it for just so long. We had to figure out how long can she do it. Okay, let's stop before that, before she gets the doubling over pain and then has to add the carbs back in. And then she would go back into this state. So it's very therapeutic. It's very helpful the more you know about it and the more you know about the underlying physiology and the detox mechanisms, the better you can help somebody in this situation. And did you have a question specifically on this? Here, stand up and grab it for me. Keep me from.
As far as the exogenous ketones, is there a sweet time of when you're supposed to use those?
I have a chart on it. Yep. And I'm not sure that they're, you know, you're better off getting in real, but with her, we got her on some exogenous ketones so that she could have less fat and could actually get to, and it was major. I mean, she could get into ketosis. It took her a long time on the ketogenic. We had this shake that she was doing, and it took her a long time to get into ketosis, but when she added the exogenous ketones, then she basically was able to get in within an hour and a half. The recommendation if you're taking exogenous ketones is to take it about 20 minutes before exercise and take it with a little MCT oil to get that in there. And if you're taking it in general, you're not, you know, doing major exercise, then you could just take it in the morning. Okay. So we only have 5 minutes left.
Have you ever heard of doing ketos with MS?
Oh my God, yes. In fact, yes, it's one of the major things with MS she asked about. It's one of the major things. Terry Wall did a lot of work with that, and I would recommend it has to be a green keto type diet. It cannot be the standard bacon and butter keto diet, but Terry Wall's book, The Wall's Protocol, has a lot of work on that, and she cured herself. Yeah, she has. She's amazing. I know her personally, and she's an amazing person. It increases brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is helping your brain to heal. So there's advantages to it. But it's not like, it's being used now as a fad diet, and people are doing it in a fad diet way, right? Just drink cabbage juice for 14 days. Let's just eat bacon and butter and, you know, stay away from vegetables and fruit, right? You can have iceberg lettuce. Some of them are saying keep your carb count down to 5 or below, and that means, yeah, here's some iceberg lettuce. It's about all you can have. I say you eat as much carb on that from fresh vegetables, mostly fiber, and a little bit of fruit if you can to keep yourself in ketosis. And if you're measuring, you know. Like for me, I can eat a little blueberries. I measured myself last night, by the way. I'm like, I'm in this situation where I'm on and I'm not sleeping well. I bet I'm out of ketosis. Measured it was 0.7. So I'm still in ketosis. You see what we're eating here, but because I've gotten myself keto adapted, you may not be able to be in ketosis eating the food here because you haven't gotten yourself into ketosis yet. But once you get yourself there, you can keep yourself there and still have the abundance of green foods. If anybody saw me eating yesterday, you saw it was a lot. I was a big plate of vegetables. I had a little bit of the cooked ones. I had mostly the raw ones. I had all the sauces. And I still stayed in ketosis, and I ate the chocolate, too. Right, so other conditions, Alzheimer's, it reduces beta amyloid. Parkinson's, it rescues the substantia nigra cells from the death when they tested it against a particular chemical they know induces Parkinson's. So that's pretty cool, MPP4, MPP+. And in epilepsy, there's all kinds of ways it affects epilepsy, and that's where really the therapeutic use of ketosis started back in the 1930s. And the GLUT1 receptors, we'll talk about those a little bit later when we talk about some of the gene stuff. Pyruvate dehydrogenase deficiency, phosphofructokinase, these are all the pathways. And if you're really geeky and you want all the science, then you can go to the next page. I think I have it. So basically, it calms inflammation, it cardioprotective, reduces appetite, improves mitochondrial dysfunction, decreases insulin, increases growth hormone, stimulates autophagy. I thought I took that science out. And then on the particular body systems in cancer, normal cells can adapt to using ketones. Cancer cells can't. So it starves the cancer away. That's why a lot of people are recommending it. Cancer as a Metabolic Disease is a book on that. Brain injury, it protects the brain from ischemia. So it's good for people who are brain injured. In the gut, it calms inflammation. In the heart, it increased the numbers of mitochondria in the cardiac muscle. That's a good thing. The cardiac muscle is got more excitement there going on. So here's the link. That'll be more clear on your page when you download this, but I just put it drritamarie.com class keto science, right? And you just go there, and I have this whole article which has all these charts and tables for those of you who like all that kind of science stuff. It's a really interesting article. I really enjoyed reading it. So when you should use caution, this is really important because it isn't for everybody. If somebody has compromised kidney, if they're on kidney dialysis, do not put them on a ketogenic diet, okay? If they have compromised kidney function, be careful. It doesn't mean no, but be careful. If they are in extreme adrenal fatigue, be careful. They need some of the carbohydrates. If they have poor thyroid function, not necessarily. Some studies show that the T4 to T3 conversion is affected, but I think that that's been done on the standard bacon butter keto, right? No, there's no micronutrients in there. You're starving the thyroid of the micronutrients it needs. So yeah, of course you're gonna have some problems there, right? But you watch. And so Dr. Alan Hopkins, who you'll hear from later, put together a panel for us when we were doing our keto challenge. And we said, do this panel before and do this panel after to make sure. And he says, you know, I'm always cautioning people, but the way you do the keto, I don't see that kind of problem, right? So you, it's a high nutrient dense, like Anna called it, alkaline, keto green, like a plant-based keto, whatever you want to call it, right? You can do it the way Anna does it with a lot of vegetables, 75% vegetables and some animal protein, you know, well-sourced, or you can do it the way I do it, which is 100% plant-based. And people think you can't do 100% plant-based and do keto because they don't realize you can do plant-based and not eat grains and beans and, you know, tons of carbs, right? And that's the problem I see when people say, I did a plant-based diet and it didn't work for me. They're eating too many carbs, and that's not being addressed. All right, so those are the kinds of things. You have these in the charts: poor electrolyte balance, histamine intolerance, oxalates, glutamate sensitivity, and then doing it right. And we've talked about this. Dr. Anna talked about this. Lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of vegetables. If the person has a lot of irritable bowel or they have inflammatory bowel, you're going to have to watch with the raw vegetables. You may have to have them juicing because the fiber may irritate. You're doing things to soothe that, you know, with your slippery elms and plantain and other herbs to soothe it and healing the leaky gut. Fermented foods, Steph's going to talk about. And I'm out of time. Keto cheats, there you go. That's the only one. Well, no, now Designs for Health has one that I actually like too. This is the only one I could find that didn't have caffeine in it and other crappy stuff. But now Designs for Health has come out with one too. It's not for everybody, but if you're trying to get somebody in quickly and they don't keto adapt, it's a way to do it. And like I said before, 20 minutes before exercise is the ideal time. And if you're not, if the person isn't exercising, which I, you know, don't recommend, but then you just do it in the morning. And then the plant-powered, I shared with my journey. I start with a five-day fast, and I usually maintain between 1.5 and 3. You know, when I'm eating more or I'm off schedule, between 0.5 and 1.5. So, yeah, I use the continuous glucose meter, and when I did, I was averaging in the 70s, and I eat loads and loads of vegetables. Somebody wants to know, just watch me eat. That's the way I eat. All right, so that's it for keto. Yay.